this morning, but granted, we have about 30 minutes, so some of it will be a bit of an overview, but hopefully we can get some good information discussed and have a little bit of time for questions. So we'll cover three areas. We'll talk about what are we talking about, and hopefully frame the discussion so that each of you have a way of connecting personally to it. I'm going to talk a little bit about mental illness, and specifically talk about anxiety and depression, two of the most common types. And then Christine will come up and share with us some of the interesting work that she's doing around mental well-being and thriving. And as Heather said, hopefully have some time for questions at the end and some general discussion. So, mental health. Where to start? I thought to frame the discussion, it was particularly important to state mental health is inextricably connected with all other aspects of health and well-being. And so while that's true, there is this negative association, and that's what we call stigma, a negative association with talking about mental health that is not there in the same way as it would be, for example, with physical health. So I'll maybe just kind of open it up. I don't know how comfortable we are about shouting out, but a question I had was, what was the first thing you thought of when you heard that this morning you were going to have a presentation about mental health? Ooh, this could be touchy.
Relevant.
Relevant. Good. Yay. That's great. Yes. How does it affect me? Good. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of change in society over the last while with opening up the discussion about mental health. So I'm pleased to hear that the immediate associations weren't necessarily negative, and not sort of like, ooh, I hope so-and-so is here this morning. They really need to hear this. This is for everyone, right? This is for all of us. All of us have mental health. So today I'm inviting you to do that, to consider yourself and your mental health. This is not just about other people or problems that other families have, or it's not just for young people, it's not just for old people. This is for all of us. And I hope that's what we can do. Oh, wrong direction. So, mental health. How would you define it? What is mental health? What are we talking about? You know that I'm going to show you a definition, so. Yeah. So according to the Public Health Agency of Canada, mental health is the state of your emotional, psychological and emotional well-being. It is a necessary resource for living a healthy life and a main factor in overall health. It's not the same thing as mental illness. However, poor mental health can lead to mental and physical illness. And that's a concept that I hope, I think Christine will talk a little bit more about it later, but it's really important. Mental health and mental illness are not mutually exclusive concepts. Somebody with a mental illness can experience good mental health, and likewise, or conversely, someone without a mental illness can experience poor mental health. That dualistic thinking, that either or, healthy, ill, doesn't tell the whole story. There's a lot more to it, and mental health exists along a continuum. So while I've just told you that either or thinking, healthy, ill thinking does not tell the whole story, it is true that there are mental illnesses. And if mental illness or mental health exists along a continuum, when someone experiences kind of a much bigger response than we would expect, for example, to a stressor, or when the difficulties they're experiencing with their mental health are so significant that it's impairing daily functioning, and this is over a long period of time, we would call that mental illness. Mental illness affects the way you think, act, and the things that you do. So I fortunately remembered my one little prop. This is the American Psychiatric Association's, it's just the desk reference. So this is the mini version of all the criteria of mental health disorders that have been observed in the human condition. This is like 375 pages of labels. And I wanted to kind of acknowledge that for many people, labels or naming the particular type of illness that they have isn't important. Labels can feel really limiting to someone. I am not my diagnosis, right? And just like every other human group, there is as much variation amongst people with a certain type of mental illness as there is commonality. Everybody will experience unique symptoms, and that will affect their lives in unique ways. So labels, you know, for the one hand, people might not like labels. On the other hand, they can be useful descriptors, especially with the way, you know, if you're seeking help in the healthcare system, the healthcare system uses these descriptors, so they can be helpful. And there's many different types of mental illnesses that we will not talk about today. Schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, eating disorders, substance use disorders, neurocognitive disorders. There's lots, as you can see, but we're going to talk about two of the most common. So, who? Why? Lifetime prevalence in Canada, the statistics say that 1 in 3 Canadians will be affected by a mental illness during their lifetime. And every year, 1 in 5 Canadians will personally experience a mental illness. So again, this is not about other people. This is for all of us. This is us. And why? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we knew exactly why one person experiences a difficulty and the next person seems to be going through the same sort of thing and has a different response? There's no straightforward answer. We know that mental illnesses are a result of a very complex interplay between our genetics, our biology, our personality, and our environment. So there's no cause and effect. Just because this happened doesn't mean that's going to happen. But we do know that there are risk factors and there are protective factors. So, of course, risk factors are things that increase the chance that you might experience this type of a difficulty, and protective factors are the things that decrease your risk. And I'm going to read you a few of each, and what I'd like you to do is think about, okay, which things are within my control and which things are outside of my control, at least for you as an individual. There's some systemic things you could talk about, but just for you as an individual. So some risk factors are childhood trauma, abuse or neglect, family history of mental illness, your age, whether you're male or female, substance abuse, chronic diseases, family, workplace, life event stressors. So those are some risk factors. These are some protective factors. Healthy eating, physical activity, getting enough sleep, living in a safe community, healthy and supportive relationships, living in housing that is clean and well-maintained, getting an education, and having a steady job. So some factors outside our control. There are many factors within our control. Learning skills to cope with the ups and downs of life is key. The earlier in life is better because you can, of course, avoid challenges that tend to compound upon each other, but better late than never. We know a lot more about the brain now. The brain is able to grow and develop throughout our lifetime. So, today we're going to talk specifically about anxiety and depression, and I'm hopefully going to do that in a succinct manner and quickly and get through all the information I want to. In terms of anxiety and depression, both are common and treatable. Recovery is expected, but will not likely be possible without some help. And recovery is often an ongoing process, not so much an endpoint or an outcome. How it's treated will depend on the severity of the symptoms and how they're affecting daily life, but for the most part will involve some combination of the following. Counseling. There's many different types of approaches and styles. The goal is to reduce your symptoms, reduce what is causing you distress, and improve your functioning. So within the program that I work with, most often the counseling that we would provide would involve some component of something we call cognitive behavioral therapy, which just is a fancy way of saying that our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors are connected, and we can improve the way we feel by learning healthier thinking patterns and healthier behaviors. But there's lots of different type of counseling approaches. Medication. Some people will also find or need to take medication. There's lots that could be said about that. Medication can help with the physical symptoms, and also help with the difficult, anxious, and depressive thoughts. They can reduce the intensity and frequency of those. The idea being that frees you up to learn the skills that you're going to need to feel better over the long term. And then there's lots of support groups and peer support out there and self-help strategies. There's more and more really quality self-help strategies out there. Anxiety disorders are the most common mental health problem. And there are many types, and we are not going to be able to talk about all the different types, but we're going to talk about anxiety. Anxiety is normal. You know, by show of hands, who has never felt anxious or nervous or had a difficult time relaxing, right? No one. We all feel anxious, and anxiety, we need it. It motivates us when there's a difficult task. It warns us of danger. We couldn't do without anxiety, but when someone experiences anxiety more often and more intensely, and it's affecting how they think, feel, and behave in negative ways on a daily or almost daily basis, they may be experiencing a disorder that requires some help. So I find the metaphor of a smoke alarm really useful. So when a smoke alarm goes off when it's supposed to, it serves its purpose. It warns you of danger, you need to get out. Think about the time, though, that you've been somewhere with a smoke alarm and it goes off too easily. You're cooking a little bit, some steam goes up, and there's the alarm. It's going off. It goes off too often, it's uncomfortable, you have to stop what you're doing and spend all your time just getting that alarm to shut off. You might even stop cooking because it's too irritating to have the alarm go off every time you cook. It's the same thing with anxiety, right? When your anxiety alarm system is set off too easily, it's very uncomfortable. You would like it to stop. You'll put all your energy into making that alarm stop going off, and you might start avoiding things because you don't want to trigger that anxiety again. Anxiety is felt in the body, and this is really important to understand. Many people who experience anxiety that's difficult are not aware or have a difficult time accepting that anxiety might be contributing to physical symptoms. But again, if you think about why we have anxiety, anxiety is meant to warn us of danger or get us ready for a big task, right? So it sets off a chemical chain reaction in our bodies. We need that. The problem is when we're experiencing anxiety that's not necessarily matching with the danger that we're facing, our body doesn't know the difference, and it reacts in the same way. So we start breathing more rapidly, we feel a little trembly, like I do now. We start to sweat because our body's heating up, getting ready to fight or flight. Our pupils get bigger, that helps us spot danger, but if you're anxious, what that means is things might seem brighter, things might seem fuzzy, we might see spots. In our fingers, the blood is rushing to our big muscle groups so that we can fight or flight. So our fingers feel tingly, they might feel numb, our muscles are tensing up, our heart is racing and pounding, all because we're getting ready to fight or flight. So as those systems are ramping up, other systems that are not necessary to fight the danger slow down. So our digestive system, what's sitting in our stomach just sits there in that stomach acid, and we feel nauseous, we have stomach upset. All of those are not in your head. They're real physical symptoms that are connected to anxiety. The challenge for people is, definitely get your physical symptoms checked out. That's important. You must do that. But some people, I think, feel very discouraged if it suggests we can't figure out why you're experiencing this. Could this have a connection to anxiety? And I hope that we can get past feeling discouraged about that, because if you want to feel better, you're not going to be able to treat the physical problem with something physical. It would be about learning new skills and so on. So lots more could be said about anxiety for sure. Depression, like anxiety, all of us have bad days. All of us feel sad from time to time, but depression, or what some people call clinical depression or major depression, is more than just having a few bad days. It's a serious illness, and like anxiety, it affects our body, it affects us as a whole, and it can be fatal, so it's important to get help. So I wanted to just very briefly kind of help you understand the difference between depression and just having some bad days. So just in terms of criteria, when someone experiences many symptoms, many depressive symptoms, for most of the day, every day, for a period of more than 2 weeks, and that can be surprising for people. Some people think, well, that's not actually very long, but that is the case, for more than 2 weeks. And when this is different for them, you know, this is not just someone who always feels this way, this is a change for them, then they meet criteria for depression. So I thought I'd show you what the criteria are. There's 9 in total. I said when someone experiences many, the actual number to meet criteria is 5 total. Of the 5, one has to be one of these two. You might have both. A person might have both, but at least one. Feeling sad or down, or having a loss of interest or pleasure. You know, the things you like to do, you're just not interested anymore. You can't get motivated to do them. So one or the other of those, at least one, you might have both, but at least one of those. And again, this is for most of the day, every day for a period of longer than 2 weeks. And this is different. And so then these are the rest of the symptoms. For a total of 9, again, 5 altogether, at least one of them has to be the top 2. So this plays out in different ways in different people in different life stages. For example, for older people will often present, for example, with a lot of aches and pains for some reason. That's maybe due to the restlessness or loss of energy. People will come in and say, I just can't think clearly. I think my memory is going. And it might be actually that they're experiencing a depression because they're having difficulty concentrating and paying attention. So if you're experiencing anxiety or depression, it's important to get help. I wanted to say that one of the important first steps, if you are experiencing these things, is talking to your doctor or nurse practitioner. And I've heard some people say, well, I'm not going to take medication. There's no point in me going to the doctor or the nurse practitioner. I want to challenge that a little bit. There are some physical problems that actually can make you feel depressed or anxious, and you would want to go get that checked out, because if, for example, your thyroid's not working properly or you have a vitamin B12 deficiency and you can treat that really easily, and maybe it won't solve all the problems, but it might help, you would want to do that. So go and talk to your doctor or nurse practitioner. Don't be afraid to use the labels. You know, could this be anxiety or depression? Once a diagnosis has been made, ask about your options for treatment. If medication is suggested and you're ambivalent or you're just not interested, maybe you devise a plan to say, okay, well, what else could I do in the meantime, and how long should I wait to see if that's helping me? When should I come back? Now, the last thing I wanted to say before handing over to Christine was, if someone you care about is experiencing a mental illness, there are so many ways that you can be a support to them. Educate yourself. Find out more about what they're experiencing so you can understand what they're going through a little better. Learn new coping skills together. Maybe you take a class together. Ask how they're doing and respect whether or not they want to talk. If they do want to talk about how they're doing, just listen, right? Don't jump in with a lot of advice. Help with practical tasks, childcare, errands. Offer to go with someone to get help. People who are anxious and people who are depressed have a hard time feeling brave and optimistic. So going with them to ask for help can make a big difference. Stay in touch with them. Invite them to activities that are healthy, like go for a walk. And spend time with people. I've heard it's really hard to spend time with that person, you know. But I can guarantee that it's harder for that person to spend time with themselves than it is for you to spend time with them. So that was what I wanted to say this morning. And I'll pass it over to Christine.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Luann. Did everybody learn something new from Luann's presentation? Or did it confirm something that you were wondering or knew? I think the real takeaway there is that we're always living in a continuum. We're not living black and white. Factors outside our control will contribute to how we feel and how we behave and how we perceive. And it's important that we are aware of that in ourselves and in others. And for anybody who's in the social media world, you have likely come across the saying is that be kind to everybody because you don't know what's going on in their world right now. The face that you see isn't telling the story that's in behind them. So do consider that. So I'm going to move on to what we would refer to as mental wellness. Without mental health, there can be no true physical health. And Luann spoke about that. We know what it's like to have that upset stomach when we're worried about a presentation. We know what it's like if we're watching a sporting event that we're wrapped up in. We know that what we can feel like if we're making sure the kids are doing well at school and that we're meeting all of their needs. So what is mental health? So our mental health is the capacity to think, feel, and act in ways that enhance our ability to enjoy life and deal with the challenges we face. It's a positive sense of emotional and spiritual well-being that respects culture, equity, social justice, interconnection, and personal dignity. And this is from our Public Health Agency of Canada. These three definitions describe three different experiences. You might experience mental distress. This is normal and expected part of life, and it's necessary for growth and resilience. You will have a stress response, but that helps you solve the problem. And it could be something as simple as yelling, the bus is here. A mental health problem. This arises from a much greater challenge in life, and you may require additional resources and support to manage or navigate this challenge. This could be the death of a loved one. This could be a strain in a relationship, and so on. It could be a change in your work. And then a mental disorder or a mental illness is a medically diagnosed illness that requires professional intervention. So what we have here is called the Keys Dual Continuum of Mental Health. And once again, Luann mentioned this. The two continuums are, let me see if I can use this. There we go. From low mental health to high mental health along this continuum. And going across, we have high mental illness to low mental illness. So what this diagram is indicating is that we'd like to be living in the top half of the circle. We want to be flourishing or striving. We don't want to be at the bottom, just getting by or languishing. But what this also tells us is that we can have mental illness, but still have mental health. Ideally, we'd like to be without illness, but we may not be able to change that. And we would have high mental health, which puts us up here in this section. So the more we talk about mental health and mental illness, the less fear and negative public perception will occur. This model shows us that mental illness and mental health are intersecting continuums. Historically, it was believed that if someone had a mental illness, they had poor mental health. And if someone had good mental health, they did not have or could not have mental illness. Keyes suggests that positive mental health is a better indicator of having a life with purpose and meaning, with or without the presence of mental illness. This model shows that we want to build good mental health, whether a physical or mental illness are present. Good mental health moves us from languishing to flourishing and thriving. And we maybe all have said at one point in time for someone that has had a physical illness, I just don't know how they're getting through this. How are they managing so well? Well, chances are that they have really good mental health. They've worked on it. They've brought up their other support. They've engaged that. They've took time for self-care so that they can better handle their physical illness. So mental health promotion. We need to look for symptoms of thriving and mental wellness to be thriving. Symptoms of positive mental health need to be present whether we have a mental illness or not. Just surviving to thriving can be a continuum, just like our mental health can be a continuum of moderately stressed to clinically depressed. So in the middle, that's when someone, when you greet them and say, how are you? They say, I'm all right. Getting by, doing okay. That's maybe when it's time to stop and ask another question or just repeat the question, how are you doing? So the five key components to mental health promotion is to think about your mental health, think positively, be socially active, be physically active, and challenge your brain. And these things are all very difficult if you are experiencing anxiety or depression. But the relief, the satisfaction, when you're able to move a little bit past that and engage in some of these activities can improve your health tenfold. So considering your mental health, self-care is deliberately taking care of your well-being through restorative activities. It's taking time for yourself, and it's important for your mental well-being. You do not need to feel guilty or lazy for spending time on yourself. You need to fill your cup. We need to put ourselves first sometimes, and it's okay to raise the flag and say, can you wait? I need to deal with this first. That's one of the bravest things that you can do. Everyone needs to develop a toolkit of strategies that works for them, and everyone's toolkit looks a little bit different based on our personality, our needs, our experiences, and our own self-awareness. So these are some strategies and tools that can help you thrive. It may be to journal. It might be to go for a massage. It might be to meet a friend for coffee, to volunteer, to practice deep breathing, to join a class, and learn to do something new. Sometimes self-care is the opposite of fun or adding something into your schedule. It can be setting limits for yourself, fulfilling obligations, and doing the things you know you need to do. There's always some satisfaction in ticking off a few items from the to-do list. But it also could be going to bed a little bit earlier, trying to get that 8 hours of sleep. It could be turning off your phone and all the distractions that come with that phone. It could be saying, no, I can't, and explaining your needs. It could be drinking those 8 darn glasses of water a day. It could be ending a negative or toxic relationship. And it could be creating a budget and actually sticking to it. If that decreases your stress, then that's what you need to do. Now, I had picked this next slide and then was pleasantly satisfied when Luann told me that this is one of her top homework items that she gives to her clients. It's to think of three happy thoughts. Think about your day and write down three thoughts from today. It helps you think about the events of the day in a more positive light. And when you write down your thoughts, it makes you accountable, and then you're more likely to fully acknowledge them and follow through. This is another tool for mental wellness. And I've been doing this for a little while now, and at first I'd get to the end of the day and went, I forgot to do it again. So I did set an alarm in my phone that 3 days a week at 8:30, I get a reminder, because usually the house is starting to settle by then, and I write them down. And I've been keeping them in a pile, because I know I'm going to come to a day where I just can't think of anything. And then I can look back at those little slips of paper, and it may just have been one day. It may be just one day that maybe Mom didn't burn the grilled cheese, but that was my happy thought for the day. So a focus on the positive increases happiness and gives a sense of well-being. It helps instill hope and gratitude. And on those dark days, you can reflect back on your collection and see how grateful that you can be. So we're going to do a little activity here. Make yourself comfortable. If you need a little extra space for 3 minutes, give yourself a bit of space. If you want to take off your glasses or close your eyes, do so. If you're not comfortable with that, just focus in on something. So what are you thinking? Think quietly to yourself. Get to your thoughts. How are you feeling emotionally? Are you sad, anxious, happy, calm, bored? How is your body feeling? Do you feel tense, hot, cold? How do your clothes feel on you? Now listen to your breath. Feel the air filling your chest. Hear the breath leave your body. Listen again. If your mind drifts off, that's okay. Acknowledge the thought and return to deep breathing. Now check how you're feeling physically. Any aches? Any pains? Does your body feel light or heavy? Feel your chest filling once again and hear the breath leave your body. Now gently open your eyes and return to the room. You can see how this is something that you could do at any time, less than 3 minutes to do a check-in with yourself. Maybe it's when you're waiting for the car to warm up. Maybe it's at the end of the day, and instead of looking at your phone one more time, you check in with yourself. Fantastic to teach your friends, your neighbors, your family, children. How wonderful for them to become more aware of themselves, their body. It might give you an opportunity to think how you can change. If the emotions that you listed seem negative to you, what can you do about that to make a change? So a circle of support helps us look at our social activity. And we look at support in four different quadrants. We have practical support, emotional, informational, and therapeutic support. This might be hard to read with the small print within, but you can see the four pieces of the pie, a very nice pie that's divided into four rather than more. Our emotional support You want to make sure that you're trying to gain the most balance in these four areas. So your emotional support, it could be your partner or your family, it can be friends, it could be listening and talking, and it can be your spiritual support. So you want to tick off as many of those pieces of pie that you can. In your informational support, maybe having a support group that you belong to or a class, having good, valid health references or resources, especially in this time right now when we're bombarded with information. Pick a very few trusted sources. Then there's therapeutic support. This could be counseling, could be looking at relaxation and meditation, could be exercise and medication. And the practical support. Maybe you do need some help with childcare or cooking or cleaning or household tasks. And maybe it's to share that with a friend. It's not that you have the means to hire someone to come in, but maybe say, hey, how about you come over for an hour? We'll work on my closet, and then we'll work on yours. So some other ideas to build mental wellness. It can be to build your community. And this helps you review who you have relationships with and who you are feeling supported and respected by. It may help you see that you may need to seek out additional relationships or step away from others. Another way to build that wellness is to enjoy the outdoors. It gives you fresh air and can help with anxiety and depression by supporting deep breathing, which cools off the front of the brain. It can energize you and ground you. And we've all heard that laughter is the best medicine. Think of a baby's laughter and think of it how it comes just from their toes. That is health and mental wellness. Getting more active can lower your risk for chronic disease and allows others to view you as a positive role model. And move to the music, whatever your choice, whatever your volume, just move. Dance like no one is watching. And finally, thinking about your physical activity. It's recommended that as adults, we engage in 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous exercise each week. And this greatly contributes to our physical and mental wellness. So perhaps you could join a class, you could go for a brisk walk, you could power clean, you could dance with the grandchildren, you could go swimming, or you could go for a hike at the park. All of these things help you work towards better mental wellness. So we all go through challenges in life, and what kind of challenges we experience can make us less mentally well. However, with strategies and tools to help us thrive instead of just surviving, we will be better prepared to meet these challenges, bounce back, and move past them. Thank you.